by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it, come in no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are grass make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off this hour, this first hour, with President Trump's speech at Norfolk Naval Station. And he's accompanied there by Secretary of Defense Mark Esper. So we're going to be featuring both of those speeches. And what they're doing is they're seeing off the USS Hope naval ship. It's a hospital ship that's going to be steaming from Norfolk to New York and then dock there to administer to some of the patients that are undergoing normal medical processes and operations, and separate those away from the COVID-19 patients in hospitals in New York City. So here we go with President Trump and Mark Esper.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, accompanied by Secretary of Defense Mark Esper.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, Mr. President, for being here today as the United States naval ship Comfort prepares to set sail for New York. On behalf of the men and women of the Department of Defense, I want to thank you for your leadership during these difficult times. You should know, Mr. President, that the United States military is all in on this national emergency, and the great sailors and medical professionals of this tremendous hospital ship are eager to get underway and start their very important mission. As the nation aggressively responds to the coronavirus pandemic, the Department of Defense is focused on three priorities. First, protecting our service members, civilians, and their families. We are committed to taking all necessary measures to safeguard the well-being of our most important resource, our people. Second, remaining prepared to carry out our core national security missions and to defend the United States against any threat. And third, continuing to support President Trump's whole of government, whole of nation response to the coronavirus. For several weeks, the Department of Defense has been surging personnel, capabilities, and equipment to help slow the spread of the virus. Thousands of National Guard troops are mobilized across the country, conducting a variety of essential tasks ranging from planning to logistics to medical support. Active duty units are moving critical supplies and equipment and medical personnel to some of the nation's most heavily impacted areas. The department's world-class doctors and scientists are at the forefront of infectious disease research, working alongside our government and private sector efforts to accelerate a vaccine and therapeutics for this virus. And now, in this great time of need, the President has directed the deployment of our nation's most powerful symbols of medical care and compassion the Navy's two hospital ships, the Mercy and the Comfort. Both ships have a tremendous history of humanitarian assistance and have provided care for people throughout the world. This exceptional legacy continues as they now take care of their fellow Americans. The skilled medical professionals who will set sail on the Comfort will play a critical role in freeing up capacity in hospital beds in the New York area. I'd like to thank them for their sacrifices and for their commitment to the well-being of the American people. Finally, I'd like to thank President Trump for his bold leadership and support to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces. This is an unprecedented time for our nation, and your leadership, Mr. President, is uniting the American people to defeat this virus. I am confident we will get through this together. We will prevail. Thank you, and it's my great honor to now welcome the President of the United States and our Commander-in-Chief, President Donald Trump.
Thank you very much, Mark, and you're doing a fantastic job, and our country appreciates it very much. And thank you, everybody, for being here today. I'm deeply honored to be at Naval Station Norfolk, the largest naval base anywhere in the world, and the home to the most powerful fleet that has ever sailed the seas. I just passed some of the most beautiful and, frankly, the most highly lethal ships that I have ever seen in my life, and there are a lot of them. And they're in better shape now than they have been for many, many decades with what we're doing. We're grateful to be joined by Commander of the U.S. Fleet Forces, Admiral Christopher Grady, and Commander of the U.S. Second Fleet, Vice Admiral Woody Lewis. Thank you both for being here. We appreciate it very much. As we gather today, our country is at war with an invisible enemy. We are marshaling the full power of the American nation, economic, scientific, medical, and military, to vanquish the virus, and we will do that. Today I'm here to express my profound gratitude to the dedicated service members who will soon be on the front lines of this fight. In a few moments, the crew of the Navy hospital ship USNS Comfort, which is really something, will embark for New York City, where they will join the ranks of tens of thousands of amazing doctors, nurses, and medical professionals who are battling to save American lives. This great ship behind me is a 70,000-ton message of hope and solidarity to the incredible people of New York, a place I know very well, a place I love. We're here for you, we're fighting for you, and we are with you all the way, and we always will be. You have the unwavering support of the entire nation, the entire government, and the entire American people. After being rushed out of maintenance with historic speed, it was supposed to be here for 4 weeks, and they did it in 4 days. The Comfort will arrive at Pier 90 in Manhattan on Monday, 3 weeks ahead of schedule. Its crew will begin treating patients on Tuesday. It will be met in New York Harbor by Governor Cuomo, who I just spoke with. He's very excited. And they need the help. The skilled sailors and civilian mariners aboard this ship will provide a critical surge capacity for the New York metropolitan area. Their mission will be to care for New Yorkers who do not have the virus but who require urgent care. In other words, they'll be using this. People will be coming out of hospitals who don't have the virus, and they'll be on the ship where they have great operating rooms and great facilities, and the places inbound on land will be where people that have the virus will be. So the people with the virus will not be on ship. The ship will be used for people having operations and other things other than that. By serving these emergency patients away from the hospitals, beds will be opened up all over the city for those who are infected. This ship can handle a lot of people, so it will open capacity all over the city. And it'll be ready to address any life-threatening medical emergency. It is stocked. It's stocked to the brim with equipment and medicines and everything you can think of. Importantly, by treating non-infected patients remotely on the ship, it will help to halt very strongly the transmission of the virus. The Comfort sister ship on the West Coast, the USNS Mercy, arrived ahead of schedule substantially in port yesterday. Governor Gavin Newsom was very thankful for it. They're working very hard in California. It's performing a similar mission for the people of Los Angeles and the people of California. As the USNS Comfort gets underway, it is fully loaded with 12 operating rooms, and they are fully equipped. 1,000 hospital beds, a medical laboratory, a pharmacy, an optometry lab, digital radiology, a CAT scan, 2 oxygen-producing plants, and a helicopter deck, which will be used very actively. It also bears our military's greatest weapon of all, a crew of nearly 1,200 outstanding members of the United States Navy, and I thank them very much. Among the sailors departing today are some of the finest doctors, nurses, technicians, orderlies, and medical staff anywhere in the world. These are true professionals, and no one performs better under pressure when lives are on the line. These are incredible people. We will stop at nothing to protect the health of New Yorkers and the health of the people of our country in their hour of need. I also want to remind everyone about the CDC's latest guidance. If you are from the New York metropolitan area and you travel elsewhere, we need you to self-quarantine for 14 days to help us contain the spread of the virus. And I am now considering, and will make a decision very quickly, very shortly, a quarantine, because it's such a hot area, of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. We'll be announcing that one way or the other fairly soon. This does not apply to people such as truckers from outside the New York area who are making deliveries or simply transiting through. It won't affect trade in any way. The Army Corps of Engineers and FEMA are racing to build temporary hospitals, which are now completed, by the way, in record time. 4 hospitals, 4 medical centers. And in speaking with the governor this morning, we're giving them an additional 4 large tents, which they need very badly. And the emergency medical stations in New York are top of the line. You have them in not only New York, but in California and Illinois. We'll be adding some to other states also. I've empowered our nation's governors with the resources to call up the National Guard and authorize the activation of ready reserves. 2 big words, ready reserves. FEMA has shipped or delivered 11.6 million N95 respirators, 26 million surgical masks, 5.2 million face shields, and a lot are being made of all of the things I just named right now. We have millions and millions of new medical items being made as we speak and purchased. 4.3 million surgical gowns, 22 million gloves, and 8,100 ventilators. We have moved rapidly to mobilize every instrument of American power. This week I invoked the Defense Production Act to compel General Motors to carry out federal contracts for ventilators, and I think they're going to do a great job. I have to say that. We're also working with the major ventilator companies in the United States, all big-name companies, all companies that do ventilators, so they won't need extra time, and they're gearing up, and they'll be working 24 hours around the clock, and they have been. They've been doing a fantastic job to accomplish a historic ramp-up and a ramp up in the kind of numbers that we're talking about. And if we make too many, that's going to be okay, because I spoke with the Prime Minister of the UK yesterday, Boris Johnson. He tested, as you know, positive. And before I even was able to get a word out of him, he said, I said, how are you doing? He said, we need ventilators. The UK needs ventilators. A lot of countries need ventilators badly. It's a tough thing to make. It's a very complicated and expensive piece of equipment. I would say more so than a car. You're talking about expensive, complicated equipment. So I hope we soon will have enough that we can help other countries with ventilators. A lot of countries need them. In the next 100 days, America will make or acquire 3 times more ventilators than we do in an entire year. We are so geared up. At Boeing, Ford, Honeywell, 3M, Haynes, and other great American companies, factory floors and manufacturing lines are being converted to produce the respirators, protective masks, face shields, and other vital equipment. And those companies have been amazing. And Boeing is giving us their cargo moving planes. They're the biggest cargo movers anywhere in the world, and we're going to be using them to ship certain types of equipment to various states. Hundreds of millions of Americans are also making tremendous sacrifices on the home front. In a historic drive to support our great workers and businesses, I signed into law the single largest economic relief package in American history. You saw that yesterday. The $2.2 trillion, and think of that, $2.2 trillion, but it goes to $6.2 trillion, depending on what we decide. This legislation delivers job retention loans for small businesses to help them keep workers on payroll, expanded unemployment benefits, and direct cash payments to American citizens. And these are very substantial payments. A family of four will be getting approximately $3,400. This legislation also provides massive increases in funding for hospitals who need it, for disaster relief fund, and critical life-saving medical supplies. We're spending a tremendous amount of money on medical supplies. We're trying to get it to the point needed directly, as opposed to our supply lines, so it can go directly to where they need it, without having to go through a long process. I don't want to say bureaucratic, but we have not. This group of people has worked so incredibly hard, and the energy and the speed with which they're delivering everything has been really admired by everybody. Everybody's talking about it, the job they're doing. My administration has also taken action to suspend federal student loan payments. So we're suspending, and that means suspending in every sense of the word, student loan payments, so that the students that are not able to take advantage of what's going on, obviously, for obvious reasons, they will be the payments suspended. We've temporarily stopped federal evictions and foreclosures. We postponed tax day until July, which is a big thing, first time that's happened, and waived regulations to speed new treatments to the market. And we have new treatments coming on rapidly. We're doing very well, we think, with vaccines, and we're doing very, very well with hopefully or potentially cures. We're looking at a lot of different alternatives, a lot of different medicines. That would be game changer. The battle in which we're now engaged has inflicted many hardships on our nation and our families, tremendous hardship on some families, and much death. But through it all, the world has witnessed the unyielding resolve of our incredible American people. We are not only a country of vast resources, we're a nation of colossal strength, towering spirit, soaring patriotism, and exceptional character, and you're showing it to the entire world. At this moment, there are 151 countries throughout the world that are under attack by this horrible, invisible enemy. 151 countries. And we're in touch with a lot of them. Our professionals are the best in the world. But who would ever think 151 countries are under attack? We are one family bound together by love and loyalty, the eternal traits so perfectly embodied by the extraordinary men and women aboard this ship and the men and women at this beautiful, scenic, but really tough base. This base is something, thank you very much, this base is something very, very special. With the courage of our doctors and nurses, with the skill of our scientists and innovators, with the determination of the American people, and with the grace of God, we will win this war, and we will win this war quickly with as little death as possible. And when we achieve our victory, this victory, your victory, we will emerge stronger and more united than ever before. We are going to be at a level of preparedness in case something like this should ever happen again, and God willing, it won't. But we are prepared. What we've done in building systems, we're now the number one tester anywhere in the world by far. We're testing more in one day than other countries are testing in weeks and months. We've learned a lot, and I cannot be more thankful to the American people, and I can say this, and I can say this from the bottom of my heart. I am very proud to be your president. Thank you very much, and God bless you all. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'll say this about President Trump. He's out there. He shows up, you know, and he works like the Dickens in the Oval Office. And there are a lot of people there trying to undermine him, these media out there and everything else. But he is responsible, and he's in the Oval Office, and he's working night and day for the country, even though some people may not agree with everything he's trying to do or whatever. But he did stop the flights out of China, and that was a big thing. And then later he stopped the flights from Europe, EU, into America. And now there are recent news articles out that would indicate that he might call for a quarantine, an official quarantine, a total quarantine of New York City, parts of New Jersey, and Connecticut to try to stem this infectious rate up there. And he's also the USS Hope hospital ship that he and Secretary Mark Esper just saw off there in Norfolk is headed towards New York City to dock up there and provide hospital beds for normal operations and disabled people that are waiting for normal operations, but not COVID-19 patients. Now, coming up next, there's a big debate going on in the country. And you have the Patriot group. They're saying that this is an operation. But then also there are real people dying, and this is a much higher death rate than a normal flu season, flu virus. So you've got this conflict that's going on and this debate that's ongoing all the time. Now the people on the right, the conservative right, the Patriot right, are very concerned about losing their freedoms and liberties. And Ron Paul is leading the charge on that. So, and Alex Jones and others. And I'm also concerned about that. So, but we cannot ignore totally what's going on the virus pandemic side. It may not reach the level of pandemics, but you have to be sympathetic with those families that have lost their loved ones, to this virus. And they're very, very, distraught and so forth. So we must also respect those families that have lost their loved ones. Now coming up next is an interview with David Icke and Alex Jones just recently. And David Icke is just a fascinating person and has written several books on the subject of the world system and the secret societies and the mystery school system and so forth. But also he has a good handle on this virus. Now, there are people are stating things I know about the moderation of some cases of this virus, but I must make it an important point that that you got to not generalize too much, because there are deaths occurring at a much higher rate. I think one of the doctors said 10 times a normal flu virus. So be careful in listening to and taking advice from these general statements. But here we go with David Icke and Alex Jones.
They've moved from hiding it to selling it. So they've been hiding what the smart grid AI control system is all about. But now they're breaking the surface because they have to bring it in. So now they've gone to sales pitch. And that is that connecting the human brain to AI, so AI becomes the human mind, it will make us gods. So that's the sales pitch. And the sales pitch with what's going on now is this virus is deadly, and unless you give up all your freedoms and allow the few to control everything and dictate everything, there is going to be mass deaths and consequences for humans. So this is part of moving from hiding it to selling it. We are being asked to believe that the entire global economic system must be shut down to protect old people. They don't give a damn about old people. And when they start saying they do, there's a scam going on. And there's a few things, Alex, that relate to this. You will have noticed, and many other people I'm sure will have noticed, that there is a clear campaign and agenda in my country, as in yours, to create a wedge, a division between the young and the old. This is the whole Greta Thunberg scenario.
How dare you, old people? We're going to push you up against the wall.
It's you old people who have destroyed the planet and are destroying our lives. It's your fault.
How dare you, David Icke? I'm going to get you with my Antifa parents.
I've got a quote here. You may have come across it. It's absolutely brilliant. It's by a Professor Dr. Sukharit Bhakti. And this guy's a highly acclaimed infectious medicine specialist in Germany. And he's one of these kind of people who's come out and, you know, spoken against the narrative. And there's a lot of these people, but they just don't get in the mainstream media. And he was asked what he thought from a virus response point of view of these lockdowns. And he said they are grotesque, absurd, and very dangerous. All these measures are leading to self-destruction and collective suicide because of nothing but a spook. As they're finding more and more people have actually had it and have recovered fine from it, some not even knowing they had it, the death ratio of people having it to people who die gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Do you know they're saying that there's this anomaly in Germany? Their death rate is so much smaller than anywhere else. Well, the thing is, they are testing people, and then they're more aware of the number who've had it or the number who've got it in mild form, which is what it is, the overwhelming amount of time. And therefore, because they see the numbers who have it, the ratio of people who die, 0.5%, the last I saw in Germany, gets smaller and smaller. Hello, Alex. How are you doing? I greet you from lockdown Britain, where democracy has been suspended, where extraordinary draconian laws have been passed by a pathetic Parliament, where we cannot, according to the law, gather in numbers more than two unless they are people we live with. We have one opportunity a day to take exercise, and we can go to get food. And when you go to the supermarkets, you have long lines that are not necessary, by the way. It's the system that makes it like that. Long lines outside the supermarket, because what they're doing now is insisting that everyone standing in line has to be 6 feet from the next person, and they're working on the basis of one person in the supermarket when another one comes out. They ought to put traffic lights up. It's like entering a freeway. So that's where we are. And it is extraordinary, you know, that over the years, so many people have said to me and commented about my work and other people like you. And they've said this idea that a few people can control the world is ridiculous. That would be impossible. The human race in vast numbers, not everybody, but in vast numbers, has given away their world, their lives, their freedom, their ability to make their own decisions, which is what freedom is about. Freedom is all about choice. And they've done that in a matter of days, in the most extraordinary process of imposition on a population which largely has not resisted it, but insisted that it happens. We have had the media here who have campaigned and criticized until this lockdown happened. Among them, Piers Morgan, this legend in his own lifetime, or legend in his own mind. And now they've got what they called for. And to an extent, I don't think the Prime Minister Boris Johnson wanted to go this far. He was the one that was resisting having professional soccer shut down. It was the soccer organizations themselves
and
that
Trump,
decided.
Trump
to,
did as well, but they said every person that dies is your fault, literally holding everyone hostage.
This is the point. You see, we have now a technocracy. This is what they want anyway, a global technocracy. But a technocracy is a society that's run by bureaucrats, experts, engineers, scientists, whatever. And this lockdown is being driven worldwide by advisors. Yes, there are some politicians who are absolutely in on it and will be very happy to front up its imposition. But those that are saying, well, hold on a minute, and this is the point. What is the catastrophic consequence, not of the virus, get into that, but of the response to the virus? And so you're absolutely right. What happens is these technocrats in the dark suits, they say, well, look, Mr. President, look, Mr. Prime Minister, our computer models, and let's not forget, ladies and gentlemen of the world, these projections, oh my God, we're all going to die. We're not, are coming from computer projections. You know, the same computer projections that told us there would be no ice at the poles by now, the North Pole, that, you know, people would be swimming in New York because of climate change. They're, those are computer models. And so they say, our computer models say that this is what's going to happen unless you do this. And if you don't do anything, Mr. President, Mr. Prime Minister, then all those deaths are going to be down to you and you're going to get the blame. Well, it takes a lot of backbone to actually resist that. And good on those who try. And see beyond it, because, you know, this is being, Alex, this is being promoted as a health crisis. It is not. If you break the figures down and you look in detail at this virus and its consequences, it is not an end of the world genocidal bioweapon. It ain't. Now, they have those things, and no doubt they have in mind at some point to use them. But people aren't falling down all over the place. It's affecting, exactly as the flu does, people with compromised immune systems, those who are old people and those who have other health problems which are draining their immune system that's trying to cope. Here's a figure from the Italian Health Service. 99% of people who've died allegedly of this virus, we can get into that as well as we go along, 99% had one, two, three, or more other health problems.
So there you go with David Icke. He has some important things to say. And they are saying, you know, his last statement there was about the Italian death rates caused with many older people with multiple, you know, problems. Now, earlier in this interview, he talked about technocracy, okay? Now, the man that really nailed that years ago was Patrick Wood, and I'm going to play a clip next coming out of his websites. Now, he's doing broadcasting and updates and so forth, and he's just a fascinating person, and he was way ahead of this technocracy. In fact, he co-wrote a book on the Trilateral Commission with Anthony Sutton, who was a legend in research about this system of rule and control. But anyway, that's what's coming up next, is this clip with Patrick Wood talking about technocracy. Here we go now.
Holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific technological elite.
We signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Well, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. This is Patrick Wood, Editor-in-Chief, and this week, Chief Cook and Bottle Washer, as I stay holed up in my office because of abject fear of getting the coronavirus. Oh, I'm just kidding. I'm not in abject fear whatsoever at this point. I figure if you're going to get it, you're going to get it. And as some experts are saying, everybody's going to get it anyway. So what's the big ado about? Well, there is a big ado because the economy is getting crushed right now. And there's several stories that have been perpetrated all over the media right now, at the secondary level, I might add, that are telling the tale of exactly what's happening to the global economy. None of it's good. We are indeed in the middle of an economic reset. And my background, as you know, is economic in nature. I wrote about the Trilateral Commission years ago in their new international economic order with Professor Anthony Sutton at the time. He was a great mentor for me personally, made a lot of difference in my life for sure. But we wrote about economic issues, and I can tell you what's going on today is an economic reset. This is the new international economic order that was specified in 1973 by members of the Trilateral Commission and the organization as a whole. This is what they wanted to do. The fact that Zbigniew Brzezinski was a co-founder of the Trilateral Commission, coming from Columbia University, where, just coincidentally, of course, Technocracy was located in 1932. In fact, it was designed by engineers and scientists from Columbia University for the most part. Zbigniew Brzezinski picked it up, fed it to the Trilateral Commission, who in turn fed it to the United Nations under the name Sustainable Development. And here we are today with all these different phrases and terms. It's so confusing. It's now called the Green New Deal. It's called Green Economy. It's called Natural Capitalism. I call it insanity. But it's upon us right now. Back in the 1930s, the original technocrats believed that capitalism and free enterprise was dead. That was the peak of the Great Depression. Instead of giving it a chance to work itself out, these over-the-top scientists and engineers at Columbia decided they would just rewrite an economic system from scratch. They would make it scientific. They would make it according to the scientific method. Let science say how things should be run. That was the biggest mistake that ever happened in the history of mankind, in my opinion. Their ideas were pretty much rejected by the end of the 1940s. For the most part, the reason was the economy recovered. capitalism did not die. It moved forward. The war, of course, as well, restarted the economic machine in America. So I guess you could say most Americans did not reject technocracy because it was technocracy. They just kind of drifted away as there was no need for it anymore. Capitalism was revived. Everything was fine. So let's forget about rejecting technocracy per se. They just faded into the woodwork until 1973, when Zbigniew Brzezinski came up with a great idea. He called it the technotronic era. Well, the coronavirus has succeeded in shutting the world down economically. Most of the panic, as far as I can tell at this point, has been created by the World Health Organization, the WHO. That's an organization of the United Nations, you know. Lock, stock, and barrel, 100%, a UN agency that pictures themselves to be in charge of the health of the entire planet. And you also know that the United Nations is sworn to destroy capitalism and free enterprise. I've written about this and spoken about it so many times, I can almost do it in my sleep. They are sworn to destroy our economic system and replace it with sustainable development. There's never any other option. There's never any other modification to capitalism or any other controls or antitrust actions or anything like that. No. Let's scrap the whole thing and start from scratch with sustainable development. This, my friends, is insanity. There's 7.5 billion people on this planet, and I don't think anybody should have the right to play 52-card pickup with the entire planet. Sustainable development is untested, is unvalidated, and as far as capitalism is concerned, it's matter and antimatter. They can't exist in the same space. Everywhere sustainable development has touched capitalism and free enterprise, gangrene has set in, and it hasn't been sustainable development that loses. The gangrene sets in and destroys a little pocket of capitalism or free enterprise. This has happened all over the planet, but including in the United States. We see that sustainable development is embedded in every single community in America today. They didn't ask for it. No mayor ever sent out a letter, or a county commissioner never sent out a letter saying, please come and transform our community into sustainable development. That never happened that way. Rather, agents from the United Nations came into our country, many of them citizens, by the way. They brought this doctrine down to the local level and fed it to the local politicians, the local business people, as if it was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and certainly it would be much better than what we have now. This was absolutely disingenuous. It was crooked, in my opinion, because they didn't tell the truth when they came in. But now we're suffering the consequences of it. Well, in the meantime, the coronavirus has shut down the economic engine of the world. And it's worse than you think. Estimates are now coming out that say that the gross domestic product of our country, and indeed of the world too, will be shocked by 30% within 3 months. People are predicting the unemployment rate to go up to as high as 30%, which was shocking because during the Great Depression, unemployment was 20%. Well, we're really getting hit now. The financial system is on the brink of collapse. I'm just waiting at this point for one major bank to shutter its doors. We don't know who that would be at this point because nobody's done any recent stress tests for the banking system in the world, but I guarantee you it's in shambles. One bank will be all it takes to throw the panic over the top. And my guess is it's going to be a blockbuster of a bank. I won't mention any names. I have some in mind, but I don't think it would be appropriate to mention those names right here. So while all this is going on, every Tom, Dick, and Harry technocrat is coming out of the woodwork to claim their little corner of the world, to take advantage of the situation, some of them with great glee, I might add, because they've been waiting for such a time that our economic system would be destroyed so they can finally flip it into the green economy, the Green New Deal. It's coming at us from every single direction. And I predicted this would happen, by the way, when we first got wind of the coronavirus in the first place. It wasn't about the virus at all in the end, not for these people. For them, it was their opportunity on a sunny day to take over the world.
That's the dangerous of this COVID-19 problem, is that the bad elements in the world are using it to take over the world and to reset, in my opinion, a financial reset is behind the scenes also that's being contemplated. But next we're going to have an interview with a dark journalist interviewing Joseph Farrell. And then we're going to, this first clip is two clips. This first clip is about what's really going on behind the scenes on this virus. But here we go with this Joseph Farrell interview.
Joseph, it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me back, Daniel.
And welcome to everyone. We are going deep, deep tonight on everything that's going on in relation to emergency powers. And we're going to get a lot of that history going on in relation to how these powers have been seized before. We brought it up recently with continuity of government and COG. And tonight, we're getting into the new developments around this COVID situation, which I've been tracking closely. And Joseph, you came up with so many things about this just as it was breaking. That's what's fascinating. And so I wanted to open up with a quote and get into this Enabling Act, and then we're going to get into Mr. Charles Lieber.
Ha!
So, but it's great to have everyone here. It's a fantastic crowd already. As usual, I'm joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And we had a little bit of a spinning beach ball of death there at the beginning of the show, but we seem to have managed it. So we'll keep rolling. I wanted to start with this quote that I think kind of sets us up for tonight. It's from President Kennedy in 1963, and he says, "Even today, there's little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there's little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it." And this is the problem that we're looking at with the hype around this health crisis and all the powers that they attempted to seize. I've seen everyone from Judge Napolitano to Professor Peter Dale Scott just drop their jaw with the amount of rights that have been seized under the guise of this. And now we're starting to see that story fall apart a little bit. As we get into this, Joseph, I wanted to ask you right off the bat, the advent in the modern era of the seizing of emergency powers really goes back to Nazi Germany.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Reichstag fire. Let me, before I get into that, let me send a shout-out to my cousin Marty.
Yes.
My cousin Marty is in the chat room. He told me he was going to be in the show tonight, so I wanted to say hi to Marty. Marty and I haven't seen each other since we were 9 years old.
Wow.
And yeah, Marty is the oldest son of my uncle, Robert Lee Farrell, that I've talked about on occasion, that worked for the Smithsonian Institution. And so Marty's in the room. I haven't seen Marty in, you know, since we were 9 years old. I went out to D.C. with my grandparents, and we spent time at my Uncle Bob's and saw all the sights. So anyway, hello, Marty.
That's great. Wow.
But anyway, the Nazis, all the seizing of emergency powers was something that happened. The Nazis purposely set fire to the Reichstag in Berlin, which is the kind of the German capital building and their parliamentary building. And as a result of that, Hitler passed what was called the Enabling Act, which allowed him, you know, to seize power by emergency. And the Enabling Act effectively made him a dictator, because what it did was it said that he could rule by decree and bypass the Reichstag entirely, which is how he seized power. So there was a kind of a continuity of government operation going on, you know, that the Nazis trumped up to take dictatorial power. And we're seeing, you know, what bothers me about this is, you know, in the Constitution, there's no provision for seizing emergency power. There's no provision for pandemics or anything like this. This has all been done by post-war executive orders and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it's a very disturbing trend. What, you know, we'll get into probably tonight is I have the opinion that this is one big op.
Yeah.
And it's been one big op all along. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Dr. Lieber, who's the chairman of Harvard's, you know, he's one of 25 university professors at Harvard University. Mm-hmm. And head of the chemistry department. He was involved in nanotechnology and chemistry research at the same time. And he was allegedly arrested. Well, he was arrested for allegedly not telling the government about his ties to the Wuhan Institute of Technology, you know, where all of this just conveniently breaks out. And, you know, his arrest comes at, you know, 2 weeks after this story really began to get cracking. So that to me tells me that this is a big operation. You know, the question is who is behind it ultimately. And I, you know, we've been seeing little clues. The Fort Detrick, the U.S. Army's biowarfare laboratory was shut down.
Wow.
You know, all of this stuff has been happening under the radar. We've got all of these arrests being made around the country. Again, it's fallen right off the radar. So this to me looks like an op. And I'm not saying, when I say op, Daniel, it's important for people to understand. I'm not saying that this is not a real virus, that there are not really people getting sick from it and really people dying from it. That is happening. Mm-hmm. But you crunch the numbers of how many people have contracted this thing and then how many people have died from it in terms of the world population. And we're looking at a few thousandths of a percent. But nevertheless, the World Health Organization comes out and calls this a plandemic. Pardon me, a pandemic.
Yes.
And the interesting thing there is there's a financial aspect to that too, because you have all of these pandemic bonds out there on the market. So people stand to lose money that invested in a certain way if the World Health Organization comes out and says it's a pandemic.
Right.
So, you know, there's all sorts of wrangles and wrinkles to this thing. Anyway, I didn't mean to get off on all that.
No, that's great. That's a great intro, because we're so deep in the heart of this. You know, everyone from people in their 80s to teenagers have never seen anything like this.
Right.
Where they just shut everything down and everybody is just told, no, you can't go anywhere. And, you know, all these things are happening. Now, what's fascinating to me is the ramping up of this, because they started with it in a certain place. They started to develop the story. And they really ramped it up a week ago Monday with this report from the Imperial College.
Yeah.
And this is a very interesting report, because it was claiming these astronomical death numbers and projecting out and saying, oh, the Black Plague is upon us. And everyone needs to get on their knees and observe the surveillance state protocol. And they just came out before we went live today.
Yep.
And retracted basically the entire study.
Yeah.
Leaving in just a little bit of wiggle room of, you know, well, we projected for 500,000 deaths. Now we think it'll be 20,000 and under. Uh-huh. That's a pretty big drop.
Right.
Because you go from a critical mass situation to something that doesn't even add up to flu numbers at that
point. Right.
So an extraordinary thing that they did there, because on the heels of that, Johnson locks down the UK, mm-hmm. you know, all these governors in the United States, Gavin Newsom calls for martial law in California. I'm sure he was dying to do that anyway.
Yeah.
But this is interesting, Joseph. The one study, it reminds me very much of CIA activities in the 70s and 80s trying to ramp up the Soviet threat for arms expansion and to create an arms race that wasn't there. And they'd insert this Team B that comes in afterwards and amps everything up and scares the devil out of everybody and gets us into these situations.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt in my mind, if you look at the numbers, that this is the real clue that it's an op. And since we're talking about numbers, there's something else we need to remember. There is not a good histogram or vector of how this disease got started, number one. We don't really know who patient zero is or was, as the case may be. We don't know enough about how this thing is transmitted. And it's apparently appearing in places where there has not really been any good contact with China. All right. Number one, that's a huge problem. So, you know, it looks to me, and I did a recent interview with Catherine Fitz where we were talking about this. It looks to me like the coronavirus story is a cover story for a lot of different possibilities. In other words, if we have Dr. Lieber involved at some point in this story, as he clearly appears to be, then there's a component of this that people are not looking at adequately, and that's the electromagnetic 5G connection. All right. In other words, we could be looking at a case of a biowarfare scenario,
right,
where the disease is present in a population and then activated by creating an electromagnetic environment that ratchets up the effect of the disease. So that's one possibility. And to illustrate that point, we look at northern Italy, which has now surpassed China in terms of deaths. Well, what do you have in northern Italy? Well, you have the 5G rollout, mm-hmm. you know, Turin, Milan, all those big northern Italian cities. And the other thing we find in northern Italy is a heavy Chinese population.
Mm-hmm.
So those two things indicate to me that this may be a story that they're using. They're talking about coronavirus when, in fact, the vectors of the disease may be several things that they're simply calling coronavirus for convenience and clamping down on the pressure. In other words, it's a distraction story. Look over here while we do something over here.
Right, right. Well, you make the great point, which is that this is kind of fascinating, too, because I haven't really seen enough on this, which is the idea that the kind of EMF side of this could be mm-hmm. amping up the illness, and that would account for the differences in numbers in all these different places.
Well, remember, Daniel, this is something I've pointed out in other interviews. Remember a few years ago we had those very strange stories about flights of birds in Tennessee or Idaho that were just dropping dead from
right.
the sky.
Yeah.
You know, they were flying around doing what birds do, and all of a sudden they fall to the ground stone cold dead. And at the time, we were told, and I even blogged about these stories, we were told that, well, this was sudden onset bird flu.
Okay.
and, you know, flu takes a long time to incubate and activate. It doesn't activate in an hour with a flight of birds and they drop dead.
Exactly.
But it was interesting in that if you looked at the pathology of these dead birds, they did appear to have flu-like symptoms. Well, I blogged about this. Somebody sent me this paper that I put up on my website that talks about using electromagnetic interferometry to shut down organisms, and it configured a certain way, it can mimic some of the characteristics of flu-like symptoms. So I thought that's very interesting, and you couple that now with what's going on with coronavirus, and I think, yeah, you have to at least entertain the possibility. Thank you, Facebook and Google, for trying to shut it down.
Right.
You have to at least entertain the possibility that we may be looking at that kind of scenario.
That was a very fascinating interview with Joseph Farrell. I've interviewed him before. So he's written tremendous books. I'm going to have these clips, the whole clips, you know, the hypertext links for all of these clips that, for the whole interview. So you can go in there and listen to these whole interviews, which are just fascinating. I want to thank everyone for listening tonight, and, God bless each and every one of you. And we've got to curb and stop this spread of this virus. And that's very, very important. So thank you for listening, and good night, and God bless each and every one of you.